Good morning and welcome to Front Row Center, the Montana Public Radio Weekly Arts Interview. I'm Michael Marsalek. Joining me on the phone today from Helena is Alan R. Scott, the music director and conductor of the Helena Symphony. Nice to speak with you once again.
Good morning.
We have the big finale concert coming up for the symphony this coming weekend. It'll be Saturday, May 3rd at 7:30, once again at the Helena Civic Center. You've entitled the concert War, Peace, and Fate, and it is arguably a big finale, I would say.
I think so. The fate piece of it is sort of where we get the bigness, as you refer to, with Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony.
Well, Tchaikovsky Fifth, and we can certainly talk a little bit about that on the program. You're also doing Vaughan Williams' cantata, the Dona Nobis Pacem, a work for large orchestra, chorus, and soloist, right?
Correct. It's maybe not a household work that people know. Vaughan Williams, particularly to American audiences, know him best probably from his Fantasia on Greensleeves that we often hear, particularly around the holidays. But he really is one of the most prominent composers of England, and particularly in the early 1900s. So he died in 1958, but he was referred to as the grand old man of English music. So he really is one of the most prominent composers. And most European orchestras do a lot of his symphonies. And this is one of his works. He particularly had a fondness for writing for voices. And he wrote this work, Dona Nobis Pacem, which is the Latin for grant us peace, taken from the one of the propers of the Roman Catholic Mass, the Agnus Dei, or the Lamb of God. And he focuses this work as a cry or a prayer, almost a demand at times for peace. Vaughan Williams was very affected by the World Wars. This was written in 1936, so between World War I and World War II. He was a true pacifist, and he often would be known for saying that he is more terrified about what the works of man will do than the works of God can do. He thought man really was its own worst enemy. And this is a real cry and prayer, and like I said, an insistence at times demanding for peace.
And isn't there, didn't he draw not only from the sacred text, but also Walt Whitman?
Walt Whitman, yes, he used, and even a political speech that was made that he heard, he brilliantly ties in the sacred text with the secular text. So it almost becomes, the sacred actually almost becomes far more humanistic, and the secular text becomes very profound in a sacred, prayerful way. And throughout all this, the soprano solo only sings the Latin Agnus Dei, Dona Nobis Pacem, the Lamb of God. So the idea that we are our own sacrificial lambs, and Dona Nobis Pacem, grant us peace. That's all she interjects every now and then. That's all she sings, where the chorus and the baritone solo are singing the rest of the text.
Talk about the guests that you brought in to be the soloists for this performance, and maybe mention a little bit about your work. I know it's an ongoing effort that you make regularly to work with the symphony orchestra and chorale as part of your programming every year.
Yeah, to address that, I guess my background being as an opera conductor first and working in that venue, I just have grown to believe and think how important it is that about 40% of the repertoire really uses voices in some capacity. And I don't know if it's a good thing or bad thing, but I've become known as sort of using a lot of voices wherever I program. Whether it be a lot of Mahler or we often do a full-staged opera here in Helena. Most symphonic choruses are used maybe two, sometimes three times a year, and they rehearse all year round. They're unlike the Helena Symphony, which is a fully professional orchestra, that the chorales are highly auditioned, but there's only one or two choruses in the country that make their living doing that. And so they rehearse often for several weeks. Most symphonic choruses probably rehearse for 3 to 4 months or at least 2 months before performing. When I came here, I wanted that to be quite different. The Helena Symphony Chorale performs about six concerts about a year. They have no more than maybe 5 rehearsals before they go with the orchestra. The sight reading is very important, and they are expected to come in and put it together very, very quickly. I mean, last season is a great example where they had to do Brahms' Requiem, The Complete Messiah, Faure's Requiem, Mozart's Requiem, a family holiday concert, and partake in the Symphony Under the Stars. So I look at the chorale as another section of the orchestra, or rather even the orchestra as another section of the chorale. I look at them as one ensemble. I don't say, oh, we have standalone, if a work and we have program works, they're just more for chorus and orchestra, but I don't look at them as separate. So the chorus is quite intense. They don't have many weeks to pull things together, and they're expected to have a lot on their own. So the soloist, we try to really feature world-class level soloists. The soprano, Diana McVeigh, she's out from the Rhode Island area. She's a regular opera singer from many big opera companies, and particularly does a lot of concert work with orchestras, not just here in the United States, but in Europe quite a bit. She premiered with us in 2012 with her Mahler's Eighth Symphony, and most recently with Brahms' Requiem. She's a class act and quite a profound singer. The baritone, Evan Thomas Jones, also has been to Helena several times, appearing in operas and in other concert works. And he's known really for being a great actor as well as a singer in terms of operas. He makes a lot of performances with opera companies. And so both of these works, they bring the drama that the solos demand.
You certainly have staged large works as part of something that you've done with every season, I know, but large orchestra and chorus, how many singers are on the stage for this presentation? And this describe or talk a little bit about the piece, a little bit more about this Von Williams Dona Nobis Pacem.
Yeah, he divides it up into about six movements, but there are no breaks. They sort of just segue in, and they're all fairly reflective and slow. But at times, very, I think I keep coming back to the word demanding. He commands and demands peace. It's not just this reflective pacifist, even though he was very much a pacifist. The music is not passive, P-A-S-S-I-V-E, and it's not, he's not also pacifist in his approach to demanding for peace. It's almost insisting. So the movements go in and out of that, whereby there's often dark moments and you hear military brass, you hear the organ pounding, he loves organ music, and you hear percussion, not tons of it, but you hear it very much in warlike. And then he even gets very talking about almost political with it, where nations will no longer, when we love each other, very Beethoven 9 type of sentiment, when we agree that we have more in common than we do not, the nations will no longer rive up against nations. And he ends it very, very quietly, barely audible, with the soprano solo just singing the word Pacem, peace. And it's quite moving.
I'm speaking with Alan R. Scott today, the music director and conductor of the Helena Symphony. The concert War, Peace, and Fate will be Saturday night, May 3rd, 7:30 at the Helena Civic Center. Tickets can be purchased online at helenasymphony.org or by calling the Symphony box office. That number is 442-1860. You can even visit the Symphony office. It's on the Walking Mall in Helena. Now talk a little bit about Tchaikovsky 5. This is one of those symphonies from struggle and tragedy to triumph, right?
Right out of the playbook of Beethoven's Fifth, where, through struggle and we gain triumph. And Tchaikovsky's is, like so many of the great romantics of this time, of the late 1800s, starting with Beethoven, as Beethoven said that he has an inner demon, and for him it was his losing of his hearing. We seem to have used the poet Lord Byron's definition of what romanticism is based on how Beethoven almost described himself, and one of those things is having an inner demon. Schumann succumbed to insanity. Brahms was quite sickened of a broken heart, and Tchaikovsky, I think, he produced music out of his suffering like these others. He was a shy child, a turbulent early years of his life. His mother died very young, and his life is quite stricken with a blanket of melancholy throughout most of his life. And he was at the time, and particularly in the 1880s, where being a gay man was not very accept it. And he struggled with that. He did marry, and that did not last. In fact, right after he married, he attempted to commit suicide, and his wife threatened to divorce him and reveal this secret that he was maintaining. And eventually, by the end of his life, right after he wrote the Nutcracker Ballet and then the Sixth Symphony, he did take his own life. And for a long time, that was not made public. The Russian government at the time, at the turn of the century, did not allow that to really be known. He died in 1893. We know now that he poisoned himself by drinking through cholera. He drank water that had not been treated. And anyone in his position, in his status in life, would have clearly known if you drink this, you will die. So it's generally believed that he willingly did this. And he had attempted suicide many times. We put the Fifth Symphony in the context of all this, and that's what I think is important. This 5 years before he died is when he writes the Fifth Symphony, 1888. So he's writing this in a way that is maybe his greatest moment of personal triumph, where it's dark, but quite moving and intimate at times, and then exceedingly more and more exciting in terms of you feel the sense of personal triumph. Right, again, right out of Beethoven 5. But the difference is that he uses a theme, Tchaikovsky uses a theme that you hear in every movement, which has been known now as the fate theme. And the second movement is, people will recognize it because John Denver used it in a song. He used the main theme of it. So people will recognize that melody quite easily.
Next season, it's the big 60th anniversary of the Helena Symphony.
Right. It'll be my 12th with the Helena Symphony. And we unofficially open the season on July 19th with the 11th Symphony Under the Stars. And we'll be announcing at the concert on May 3rd what that program will be. It is very exciting. It's unprecedented. We've worked for months working this out. It's never been done in any state around here. And it's anybody who's ever had a childhood will want to be there for this. That's July 19th, and that also begins the celebration of the city of Helena for their 150th birthday. So that will be a part of it, and as part of our 60th, we will have a composer in residence by the name of Kyle Smith from Philadelphia, where I am from, and Kyle is a fairly well-noted composer these days, and he will be writing two new works, one of which will be to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the city of Helena and the 60th birthday of the symphony. Another work will be for cello solo and orchestra. Some other cool highlights: we will have Joel Fan, the great pianist who is partners with Yo-Yo Ma in his Silk Road Ensemble. He will be returning to do Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto. I mentioned the Romanian cellist Ovidiu Marinescu will be coming in January. Our concertmaster, Stefan Cepeda, will open the season with Brahms' violin concerto. Another great highlight is St. Matthew's Passion will be performed the day before Palm Sunday, and it will be quasi-staged, which we're calling it will be ritualized. Not staged like an opera, but it will look nothing like a concert either.
Yeah, sounds wonderful. 60th anniversary season of the Helena Symphony.
60th anniversary, and we conclude with the Beethoven's Ninth, as well as a world premiere piece in this time next year.
The concert coming up this weekend is War, Peace, and Fate. The Helena Symphony will perform Saturday, May 3rd at 7:30 in the Helena Civic Center with soprano and baritone soloists. Tickets are available online at helenasymphony.org or at the Symphony Box Office. You can call 442-1860 for more information. I've been speaking with Alan R. Scott, the music director and conductor of the symphony. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.